Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Francis Alonso reporting. Officials in Tanzania's Zanzibar region have nullified results from Sunday's election. It's a move that could affect the outcome of the national presidential poll. Zanzibar's Election Commission said Wednesday the results were annulled because of gross violations in the voting process. Meanwhile, the commission chairman said there is a need to hold fresh elections in the archipelago. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara has won a second five-year term in office. That's according to official election results. The country's election commission said early Wednesday that Ouattara took 83.66% of the vote in Sunday's election. The commission has already estimated turnout from Sunday's vote at around 60%. However, a civil society group put the figure at 53%. The long-awaited African Union Commission of Inquiry report on the South Sudan conflict has been released. It finds that both the South Sudan government and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar committed human rights violations, some of which the report says constitute war crimes. The report says the violations include killings and murder, torture, cruel, inhumane, and other degrading treatment. Meanwhile, the South Sudan government officials were not immediately available for comment. A Somali official says a militant group, Al-Shabaab, has taken possession of a small plane that crashed Wednesday west of the capital of Mogadishu. Sources tell VOA Somali service that 9 to 11 people were on board the plane, which came down near the Al-Shabaab-controlled village of Omar Diyari. However, it's not known what caused that crash. This is VOA News. Germany's interior minister has sharply criticized Austria for sending migrants and refugees to its border without prior notice and under the cover of night. Speaking to reporters in Berlin Wednesday, Thomas de Maizière said Austria's handling of refugees is out of order. He goes on to say that the number of refugees has risen very significantly in recent days because of a backlog on the Balkan route. He says thanks to a huge effort, they managed to take in the asylum seekers and refugees in Bavaria and distributed them further across Germany. De Maizière also said that many Afghans reaching Germany will most likely be sent back to their country. Global internet freedoms have declined the fifth year in a row for millions of people around the world. That's the conclusion of a new report, Freedom on the Net 2015, that was released Wednesday by Freedom House. Governments around the world continued restricting online expression, censoring websites, and cracking down on a variety of tools designed to protect user privacy. Laura Reed is a research analyst for Freedom on the Net Project.
We're seeing this through governments passing new legislation and directives which expand their legal capacity to conduct surveillance, to retain user data. We're also seeing the proliferation of surveillance technologies around the world, both in kind of more democratic environments as well as in countries where governments have abused those technologies in the past and have used them against human rights activists, critical journalists, other groups like that.
It's the sixth annual survey of 65 governments and their policies regarding censoring online content, electronic surveillance, and how they may punish citizens whose online activities they disapprove of. Iran says it will attend the international talks on Syria's future later this week. It marks the first time Iranian officials take part in an international summit aimed at finding a solution to the conflict in Syria. Iranian media reported that Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif will attend the meeting in Vienna, accompanied by three deputy foreign ministers, according to a foreign ministry spokeswoman. Meanwhile, the U.S. delegation will be led by Secretary of State John Kerry. The main set of meetings is due Friday. However, preliminary talks are expected Thursday. The head of the organizing the 2014 World Cup in Brazil has agreed to be extradited to the United States in the FIFA bribery case. José María Marín agreed to the U.S. request at a judicial hearing, according to Switzerland's Justice Ministry in a statement on Wednesday. More at VOAnews.com, I'm Francis Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehisu Heban coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
It's been a bumpy ride for Tanzania this week as results from Sunday's presidential and parliamentary polls have trickled out of the National Electoral Commission.
That's Jill Craig reporting from Dar es Salaam. Details coming up.
Also, Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has won a second term in office. As winter approaches, health conditions are deteriorating for an estimated 6,000 migrants in the French port city of Calais. And the Nigerian military says it has rescued nearly 340 children and women who were held captive by Boko Haram militants.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Togo, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, it's been a very bumpy ride for Tanzania this week. Results from Sunday's presidential and parliamentary polls have been slowly trickling out of the National Electoral Commission. And Zanzibar is in turmoil over its election results. Jill Craig reports from Dar es Salaam.
While election observers have generally agreed that voting Sunday was organized and calm, the process has since hit some snags. Tanzania's opposition party, Chadema, said Monday that police detained 40 of its volunteers who were tallying results of the presidential election. The police commissioner said the arrests were based on violations of electoral procedures. A few street skirmishes have been reported around Dar es Salaam since Sunday, allegedly by some voters frustrated by the delays. Harold Sungusia is director of advocacy for the Legal and Human Rights Center in Tanzania.
In other countries, it could be worse, but here, at least people have that kind of their attitude, which is being patient, being calm, and then being able to wait until things are done. But this time around, those few incidences are kind of tarnishing our good name as a good country of people who can lead their things without violence.
The Electoral Commission in semi-autonomous Zanzibar annulled its elections Wednesday, citing violations of electoral law. This comes after the main opposition presidential candidate there declared himself the winner Monday before any official results were announced. Police fired tear gas to disperse crowds. George Otieno is a shopkeeper in Dar es Salaam. He says that people need to follow the law.
The only thing I know that you are not supposed to declare yourself a winner before the Electoral Commission announces your name.
Lead opposition candidate Edward Lowassa of Chadema Party called Wednesday for a recount of the presidential vote, saying he will not accept the result. As of late Tuesday, the ruling party candidate for president, John Magufuli, was in the lead. With just around half of the districts announced, the CCM candidate held 56.51% of the votes, while Lowassa had 41.67%. Meanwhile, the opposition coalition, UKAWA, which includes Chadema, picked up at least 9 parliamentary seats from ruling party members, including several cabinet members, dealing a blow to the CCM. Shopkeeper Irene Kaforo says people need to remain calm.
I think our leader have to make a condition for people to accept anything can happen. In an election, people can win and people can lose.
Final presidential results are expected Thursday. Jill Craig, VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Tanzania's opposition candidate for president, Edward Lowassa, wants a recount of the presidential poll. Lowassa says there were gross irregularities in the conduct of vote and the rigging and manipulation of the final count. The ruling party says its presidential candidate is ahead with about 60% of all ballots counted. The ruling party claims the lead in parliamentary elections as well. VOA's Vincent Makori is in Dar es Salaam. He explained to reporter William Eagle why a manual recount of the vote may be difficult.
First, we have to start by pointing out that actually there's no legal recourse. Under a certain rule from some years back, no candidate or party can go to a court of law and make any demands. So as things stand now, it will be upon the good heart, if you say so, of the Electoral Commission to make any of such accommodation from the opposition.
Vincent, it seems ironic that the Electoral Commission on the mainland has supported the conduct of the poll there, and yet It's a quite different story in terms of Zanzibar and its electoral commission. Tell us about that.
In fact, the opposition was just starting to have their press conference this morning. There were news came from Zanzibar that the election commission there, the election commission chairman, Salim Yeche, had nullified the results in Zanzibar. And what did he say? He said there was gross violations, and therefore that election was annulled, and there would necessarily be a new election in Zanzibar, which was such a surprise, and was picked up by the opposition as evidence that there is a scheme to deny the opposition victory in this election.
Did he name or articulate any specific violations that he considered to be gross violations?
Well, they say there was interference at the polling stations, but some youth may have stormed some of the polling stations and interfered perhaps with the ballots there. And this followed the opposition leader's declaration that he had won the election. Young people immediately almost demanded that he be declared the president of Zanzibar. And, of course, the police intervened. They tear-gassed him, and there were skirmishes there. So they hopefully, I mean, maybe could be using those incidents as a reason to consider, issues of violations around the polling stations in Zanzibar and Pemba.
Have you noticed yet any reaction in the press or in the streets to any of these announcements today?
Well, in Zanzibar, there has been a lot of tension. There have been demonstrations already, several clashes between the police and the opposition supporters. The authorities there have been really hard, even on the media. They're not allowing foreign media particularly to film anything. So we have a hard time even getting any images from Zanzibar. But on the mainland, so far, I think people are trying to dissect and also kind of synthesize the information they're receiving from their leaders, the leaders of the opposition. And so generally the citizens haven't had any major reaction, because the opposition leaders said they were going to have another meeting to determine what is the next move after today.
I understand that also on Tuesday, the African Commonwealth and European election observers issued a preliminary report on the polling. Can you tell us what that report said?
All the international electoral monitoring teams actually did release their preliminary reports. That included the European Union observer team led by the former president of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan. There is also the South African Development Community Monitoring Group. There's the Great Lakes Monitoring Group. There was also the Africa Union and also East Africa Community, including also the European Union Monitoring Electoral Monitoring Team in Tanzania. Almost to, all of them. Let me say, all of them said the elections were credible, except for some issues here and there. They were categorical that these issues were isolated, although they did qualify their statements by saying that they'll continue monitoring until the process is completed. But at that point, they said by yesterday, they considered the election fair, free, and credible, despite some notable issues at isolated polling stations. They did, however, say that they were concerned about the situation in Zanzibar, but all they said was that they were concerned that the opposition leader had announced himself the president, which was goes against the rules of the Electoral Commission. But also they were concerned about the arrest of some young people who were found collating election results at polling stations. And the tension, of course, that was and has been very, very palpable on the island.
That was VOA's Vincent McCauley. He was speaking to reporter William Eagle.
Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has won a second term in office. He received 83% of votes on Sunday, according to official results announced overnight. His win doesn't come as a surprise, as Emily Yob reports from Abidjan, where Ivorians are reveling in the calm.
Car honking, people rushing to work, vendors selling coffee by the side of the road. The streets of Abidjan look just like any other day, just a few hours after results were announced. And this simple fact is for Tonian Amalaman a reason to rejoice. He says it doesn't matter who won. I'm happy to be able to walk down the street and see that there is no violence. A nearby opposition supporter agrees. I am not a supporter of Ouattara, this woman says, but I must admit that I'm happy because I was fearing the announcement of the result. I didn't want any violence, she says. But everything went well, and I hope it will last, because you need peace if you want a country to develop. President Ouattara won a landslide victory. Second place candidate, Pascal Affien-Guessant, got just 9% of the vote. In 2010 and 2011, more than 3,000 people were killed in post-election violence when incumbent President Laurent Gbagbo refused to accept defeat. Internationally accepted results showed Ouattara had won the November 2010 vote. Gbagbo is awaiting trial at The Hague for crimes against humanity, but tensions live on. Behind the scenes of a planned electoral holdup, read one local newspaper headline Wednesday morning. Several opposition candidates pulled out of this race before and even after voting, while others called for a boycott. Gbagbo supporter Roland Andrin says he didn't vote and claims the 54% turnout announced by the Electoral Commission is false.
Les élections se sont passées dans le calme.
He says elections were calm because the real Democrats stayed home. He says the people of Ivory Coast know Ouattara is an imposter. Ouattara's first term was focused on getting Ivory Coast's economy back on track, and Ivorians says there is more work to be done. This man, Sekone Awona, says this is what we are asking the president, especially job for the youth. There is too much unemployment. Local and international election observers says that, despite minor incidents, Sunday's poll was free and fair. Emilia Yop, VOA News in Abidjan.
As winter approaches, medical officials in the French port of Calais warn that health conditions are deteriorating for an estimated 6,000 migrants. They're currently camped on the shores of the English Channel. Officials may offer to move the migrants into shipping containers to be used as shelters. The migrants are living in tents. They chose the location because it is near the mouth of the Channel Tunnel that leads to England. Meanwhile, Austria has announced it would build a fence along its border with Slovenia, consisting of containers and railings. Austria wants to slow and control migrant flows from the Balkans. But Germany has criticized the move as the two countries disagree over how to handle the crisis. Hungary and the Balkan neighbors have erected barbed wire fences and other barricades to slow or block the passage of migrants.
In related news, 11 political parties in the Netherlands have published an open letter encouraging calm and reason. Also, UN Human Rights Commissioner Zayed Ra'ad Al Hussein has warned politicians to temper their language during the migrant crisis. He says derogatory language causes violence, racism, and bigotry. And the Swedish government has decided to stop publicizing where migrants and refugees are being housed. Arsonists have damaged or destroyed 20 facilities for migrants in recent weeks. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiyis Wuhib, 19 past the hour. Here is a recap of our top stories. Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has won a second term in office. And as winter approaches, health conditions are deteriorating for an estimated 6,000 migrants in the French port city of Calais. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
The Nigerian military says it has rescued nearly 340 women and children who were held captive by Boko Haram militants. It says they were found in two camps on the edge of the Sambisa forest in Borno State. The military announced on social media that the rescues occurred yesterday when they attacked the camps and killed 30 Boko Haram fighters. Nigerian troops have rescued hundreds of Boko Haram captives this year, but most of the more than 300 girls kidnapped from a school in Chibok a year ago remain missing.
The UN estimates the six-year-old Islamic uprising has led to the deaths of about 20,000 people and driven 2.3 million from their homes. Also, troops in neighboring Niger are pursuing a band of militants who killed about 14 residents in a village last night near the Nigerian border. Security sources say suspected Boko Haram insurgents attacked the village of Ala in Niger's Diffa region. They reportedly executed the residents before burning their homes. Niger's parliament has extended a state of emergency for the border region for another 3 months.
The World Health Organization announced today the yearly death rate from tuberculosis is nearly half of what it was in 1990. However, the WHO says 1.5 million people died from the disease in 2014. It says most of the deaths could have been prevented. The World Health Organization released its annual tuberculosis report today. In related news, people infected with HIV, the AIDS virus, are at a much greater risk of also being infected with tuberculosis. And TB can kill a lot quicker than AIDS. That's why a major conference on TB is scheduled for Durban, South Africa, next July. TB 2016 will immediately precede the 21st International AIDS Conference. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
International AIDS Society President Chris Byra says TB is one of the world's deadliest communicable diseases.
TB and HIV are really inextricably linked epidemics, and TB is, of course, a killer on its own, but it is also what we call an opportunistic infection in people living with HIV, and it's actually the leading cause of death for people with HIV infection. About 25% of all AIDS deaths are due to TB on top of HIV.
Byra is a professor of epidemiology at Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health. He explains why HIV patients are so at risk from the TB bacteria.
One unfortunate reality is that the HIV virus, of course, weakens the immune system. That's why it's called the human immunodeficiency virus. And that weakening of the immune system means that people who have exposure to TB, and in many parts of the world, the majority of people have TB exposure as children and have latent TB, they're much more likely to progress to active tuberculosis disease, and also to transmit tuberculosis.
HIV epidemics, he says, ramp up TB epidemics.
Second issue is that people progress more rapidly if they have both HIV and TB. They're more likely to have TB in other parts of the body, not just in the lungs, and they're sadly more likely to die of TB.
TB 2016 is a two-day event preceding AIDS 2016 in Durban. The AIDS conference was last held in Durban in 2000. It was the first time the meeting was in a developing country, and the first time the gathering looked at the social and economic impacts of the disease, rather than just the scientific. Barris says treating HIV infections and preventing new infections are key to tuberculosis control.
That is one of the reasons why we felt it was so important at this conference, coming back to Africa now after 16 years, to really highlight the TB-HIV interactions.
There are several types of tuberculosis, including those that resist treatment. They are multidrug-resistant TB and extensively drug-resistant TB. Treatment can be long, harsh, and often unsuccessful.
Of the 9 million or so people who have TB, a substantial proportion of them now, close to 500,000, have multidrug-resistant TB. Extensively drug-resistant TB, which is resistant to virtually all the drugs that we currently have, emerged in South Africa, although it's now been seen in many other places, in the context of folks with HIV and TB infection. So that is a real concern.
Professor Beyra says to tackle HIV-TB will take a lot of resources at a time when budgets are very tight.
This year, on World AIDS Day, so that's December 1st, the World Health Organization is going to announce the major change in the guidelines for treatment of HIV, which will be that everyone should be offered immediate therapy if they're diagnosed with HIV infection, so not waiting until they have more advanced disease. That's going to mean that 22 million more people are going to be eligible for therapy. Right now, worldwide, we have 15 million people on antiviral therapy.
That's going to take a lot more money, but health officials say it would be cheaper in the long run because patients would not succumb to opportunistic infections. Treatment would be given before HIV destroys or heavily damages the immune system. AIDS 2016 returns to Durban after 16 years with the theme Access, Equity, Rights Now. Back in 2000, things were very different in South Africa. Then President Thabo Mbeki refused to say HIV caused AIDS. Health officials and activists say that position delayed antiretroviral therapy in the country for years. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. National Academy of Sciences says there is a decline in lion populations in Western Central Africa. Researcher Philip Hancho told the Associated Press there are only about 400 lions remaining in the West and Central region. He predicts only about 200 will be alive in 20 years. There are about 20,000 lions left in Africa. Most are in game preserves in South Africa, Botswana, Zimbabwe, and Namibia. There's also news about more elephant poaching. In Zimbabwe, rangers found 22 elephants in the nation's premier wildlife sanctuary poisoned with cyanide. Poachers had poisoned 40 other elephants earlier in the month. Park officials say three poachers from Zimbabwe and one from Mali were arrested at the Harare International Airport this week. Inspectors discovered they were in possession of 172 pounds of ivory bound for Singapore. This is African News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehye Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa. We follow up on Sunday's elections in Ivory Coast and Tanzania as votes are being tallied to determine who will lead both countries for the next 5 years. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests for an in-depth analysis on the elections. That's Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara has won a second term in office. And as winter approaches, health conditions are deteriorating for an estimated 6,000 migrants in the French port city of Calais. Coming up, we'll have music from Togo. And in our feature segment, political tensions are rising ahead of national elections in Uganda. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you're beginning with some presidential kudos.
Kim, let's begin right here in Washington, where President Obama has welcomed the world champion U.S. women's national soccer team to the White House.
This team taught all America's children that playing like a girl means you're a badass. Perhaps I shouldn't have used that phrase. Playing like a girl means being the best. It means drawing the largest TV audience for a soccer match, men or women's, in American history. It means wearing our nation's crest on your jersey, taking yourself and your country to the top of the world. That's what American women do. That's what American girls do. That's why we celebrate this team. They've done it with class. They've done it with the right way. They've done it with excitement. They've done it with style. We are very, very proud of them. So once again, on behalf of all Americans, congratulations. We couldn't be prouder of you. Let's go bring home the gold in Rio. Thank you.
Standing next to President Obama at the White House ceremony was veteran American star Abby Wambach, the leading scorer, male or female, in international soccer history. Hey, Abby, what did you think of the president's badass statement?
Well, I think that that's one of the best statements you can make, because when somebody says you throw like a girl, you run like a girl, I'm kind of like, yeah, you're damn right I do. And I think that that's what that statement is. And I think that our team completely encompasses that. We want to be proud of being female. We want to be proud of having 25 million people watching that game. And we want to be proud of pushing the sport forward, not just on the field, but also off the field.
Abby Wambach can be proud of helping push women's soccer forward, and she's making off-the-field plans. Shortly after the White House ceremony, the 35-year-old Wambach announced she's retiring from the sport after a friendly match December 16th against China in New Orleans, Louisiana. Abby has appeared in 252 international matches and scored a record 184 goals for the U.S. women's national soccer team. After celebrating the world champion U.S. women's national soccer team, President Obama traveled to Chicago, where he watched his favorite National Basketball Association club, the Chicago Bulls, play their season opening game. The president sat courtside and saw the Bulls edge LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers 97-95. Spanish star Pau Gasol blocked a potential tying layup by LeBron in the closing seconds. LeBron led Cleveland with a game-high 25 points, while Nikola Mirotic, who was born in Montenegro but plays internationally with Gasol on Spain's national team, had 19 points for the Bulls. In the other season-opening games Tuesday night, the Detroit Pistons scored a 106-94 road victory over the Atlanta Hawks, and the defending NBA champion Golden State Warriors beat the visiting New Orleans Pelicans 111-95. Sharpshooting guard Stephen Curry, the reigning league most valuable player, scored 40 points for the Warriors, connecting on shots from all over the floor. The Warriors received their championship rings before the game in the western U.S. city of Oakland, California. Golden State's head coach, Steve Kerr, attended the ring ceremony, but then left for the locker room to rest his surgically repaired back. Interim coach Luke Walton led the Warriors during the game.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
Major League Baseball's World Series got off to a thrilling start Tuesday night when the Kansas City Royals edged the visiting New York Mets 5-4 in a marathon game one that went 14 innings. Kansas City first baseman Eric Hosmer hit a sacrifice fly that allowed Venezuelan shortstop Alcides Escobar to score the winning run at about 1:15 a.m. Wednesday local time in Kansas City, Missouri. The game lasted 5 hours and 9 minutes, the longest game won in World Series history. It also featured a power outage that briefly shut down the TV broadcast and also delayed the game. It also had an inside-the-park home run by Escobar in the first inning. That was the first World Series inside-the-park homer since 1929. Game two in the best-of-seven World Series is later Wednesday night in Kansas City. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is David Legg, our Johannesburg-based African football guru. Good evening, David.
Thank you, Sonny.
David, recently back from Nigeria's commercial capital, Lagos, and our friends at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, they send their regards, David. They say they enjoy your football analysis.
That is good to hear, Sonny. Nigeria, of course, a huge country, the most populous in Africa. I'm very pleased to hear that news, and I send my best wishes to all the football fans of Nigeria. That's a huge number of people, Sonny. That is tens of millions of people.
Let's turn to Europe now for a look at recent African goal-scoring highlights. I know David Legg gives out those on-air high fives only sparingly, but don't the IU brothers, Andre and Jordan, deserve a high five this evening, David?
Definitely, Sonny. Make it a high six. one extra finger, Sonny. An amazing, amazing, amazing story. I mean, to have two brothers playing on opposite sides in the English Premier League is something you don't come about very often. The only one I can think of offhand are the Neville brothers, one playing for Everton, the other for Manchester United. But I'm sure all our listeners, Sonny, including those millions up there in Nigeria, will probably remind us of some other brothers. But the issue is, have two brothers played against each other and also both scored, because that's what happened at the weekend at Villa Park in Birmingham in England. Jordan Ayew, the younger of the two brothers, he scored for Aston Villa, gave them the lead. And then the winning goal for Swansea City came from Andre Ayew. Andre Ayew, the older brother and perhaps the better known of the two. And, of course, they are both sons of the legend from Ghana, Abede Pele Ayew. A 2-1 victory for Swansea, and a very interesting reaction to that, Sonny, in that Tim Sherwood was sacked as manager of Aston Villa just the following day. Villa, I'm afraid, really struggling down near the bottom of the English Premier League, and that was one defeat too many as far as the owners of Aston Villa were concerned. So Tim Sherwood becoming the latest casualty, but... yes, indeed. The Ayews, Abede Pele, Sonny, he must be so proud. Mm. You have two sons competing against each other and both scoring goals, and the one from Andre Ayew proving to be the winner. So well done to them. And they weren't the only Africans to make headlines in the English Premier League. Sadio Mane, he's the diminutive Senegalese goal poacher, as I always describe him. He seems to sneak in where nobody is watching him, score all these nice goals for Southampton and also for Senegal. He had quite an interesting and busy time of it in Liverpool. He was booked, then he scored an 86th minute equalizer for Southampton away to Liverpool. spoiling the hope for first victory of their new German manager, Jurgen Klopp. And then, Sonny, he became really naughty. He, in stoppage time, tripped a Liverpool player. That meant a second yellow card. And, of course, that automatically translated to a red. And I enjoyed writing a headline about this, Sonny. I said, the Southampton are known as the Saints. So I said, here was a case of a saint who became a sinner. And that was Sadio Mane. The goals for the equalizer and then the red card. And a similar situation happened in Italy to Mohamed Salah of AS Roma. He scored the first of two goals for Roma in a 2-1 victory over Fiorentina that took Roma to the top of the Italian league table. But then, right at the death, he also was red-carded. So two cases of goal scorers becoming villains, so to speak. In that same match, the other Roma goal also came from an African. It was Gervinho, the dreadlocked Ivorian winger, who's had a new lease of life. He was really struggling with Roma, was battling, in fact, to make the first team. But all of a sudden, he's found his goal-scoring form, and he's now playing a very significant role for the new Italian league leaders, Roma. And of course, Sonny, when we talk on the sunny side of sport about African goal scorers in Europe, one name crops up consistently, and that's Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the Gabonese superstar. He's been scoring as if it's going out of fashion for Borussia Dortmund. And on the weekend, he scored a hat-trick in a 5-1 victory. And very touching, I thought. He dedicated it, he said, to his young son. He's now the joint leading goal scorer with Lewandowski, that's the Polish striker of Bayern Munich. And, of course, Aubameyang created a record this season. He scored in the first 8 rounds of the Bundesliga. And I would have thought, Sonny, he has got to be a contender for the 2015 African Footballer of the Year title there. Scoring very consistently, and as we've said many times on The Voice of America, the Bundesliga, one of the really top leagues in Europe. It's maybe just a little bit behind the English Premier League, La Liga in Spain, and also Serie A. And I think after that, you would certainly have to say the Bundesliga.
Still with the Bundesliga, David, let's give a sunny side of sports shout-out for 28-year-old Julian Nagelsmann, who was set to become the youngest head coach in league history. Struggling Hoffenheim, currently in 17th place in the Bundesliga standings, says Nagelsmann will be their head coach next season. He's currently in charge of Hoffenheim's under-19 team and still needs to pass his senior coaching exams. Hoffenheim fired Marcus Gisdol on Monday and named 61-year-old Dutchman and Bundesliga veteran Huub Stevens as his successor until the end of the season. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Coming up, political tensions rising ahead of national elections in Uganda. And next, some good business ideas by young African entrepreneurs living in the United States. But first, some music. Here is Hosti of Togo with Mia Simi.
Mama, sign and put it up and give each other a hug. Cause I don't know why we hate others. We all one blood, but different color, living in one world, sharing different nature. The same people using different culture. As a God children, we need to love each other. Stop the blood sharing. Cause little ones are dying, little ones are dying.
Of Togo with Miasimi.
Well, civil society leaders are calling for calm in Uganda, where political tensions are rising ahead of national elections set for February of next year. Witnesses say police are using heavy-handed tactics to break up opposition gatherings. The government and opposition are both alleged to be recruiting youth militias to fight in the streets. Elizabeth Pala reports from Kampala.
Confrontations between police officers and opposition activists are on the increase in Uganda. There have been two major clashes in the eastern towns of Soroti and Jinja, as well as smaller incidents around the country. Witnesses say the clashes largely stem from police trying to break up opposition gatherings. Human Rights Watch and the UN Human Rights Office recently both condemned what they call inhumane treatment of detainees by police and the use of tear gas and rubber bullets. There are also reports that militias and youth brigades are being formed throughout the country for use during the election campaign. Human rights lawyer Nicholas Opio says it appears that both the ruling NRM party and the opposition are escalating the tensions.
First, the NRM has reactivated those informal groups, the militias, and they are being trained with state resources. But we've also seen the increased recruitment of what you call crime preventers. These crime preventers are passed out singing songs of praise of President Museveni, wearing NRM t-shirts. These, in my view, are agencies of violence. The opposition have also responded, training their own militias and youth groups. These are all youth groups that have been very violently confronting the authorities during demonstrations.
The government says the crime preventers are there to supplement the police during the electoral period, while the main opposition FDC party denies recruiting militia. The FDC says the police are using the militia allegation as an excuse to undermine their campaigning, including arresting party leaders on October 10th. Ugandan police spokesman Fred Enanga says militia activity prompted the police to crack down on a recent meeting in Jinja hosted by presidential aspirant Amama Mbabazi.
The intelligence that we had in that operation was that they are a group of militias, including Iraqi returnees, Afghanistan returnees, that had been recruited among the security ranks of the Honorable John Patrick Amama Mbabazi. And these are, of course, militias that had advanced techniques in military tactics. And, of course, they confronted our officers.
And Mbabazi's spokesperson says there were no militia at the Jinja event. Meanwhile, rights group Privacy International released a report this month saying that the government has installed surveillance software in hotels and government buildings to spy on journalists and political opponents. The government says the documents in the report are not authentic, pointing out what they say are falsified letterheads and misspelled names. Privacy International is standing by its report and has called for a parliamentary investigation into the use of spyware in Uganda. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
A growing number of young African entrepreneurs living in the United States want to get their ideas for new businesses off the ground. Today, the U.S. Africa Chamber of Commerce and Washington, D.C.'s Young African Professional Network are trying to make that happen. The two nonprofits recently organized a workshop where young entrepreneurs were given the chance to present their business models to a panel of experts. Ian Bior has the story from Washington.
Officials with the U.S. Africa Chamber of Commerce say when it comes to investing in sub-Saharan Africa, diaspora investors have a unique advantage over foreign investors. They are not only familiar with their native country's political landscape, but they typically have an extensive knowledge of their country's market and existing business networks in the country. Adebayo Dawadu, the co-founder of the U.S.-based tech firm TipHub, which targets the African diaspora, says the biggest mistake most entrepreneurs make is waiting for the right time to build their company.
Probably the first 5 business ideas you're going to have is not going to be successful. It'll be very rare, but take the lessons learned by just starting. Start, fail, and repeat. You know, the worst thing you can do is to do nothing at all.
Another thing to remember, according to Kwaku Enduam, co-founder of Group Enduam, is always tell an engaging story when selling your idea to a potential investor.
When I'm evaluating a pitch for a future meeting, I want something that's interesting because, you know, there could be a very profitable, boring company. There are tons of them out there. I want a company that may or may not make money, but definitely that has a good story that I can enjoy participating in and that it will be pleasant to help grow.
According to the World Economic Forum, about 80% of businesses fail, but those odds are not stopping young African entrepreneurs like Rose Essien, who is starting a social networking firm here in the U.S. She says the biggest challenge is having to juggle her full-time day job and then having to work another 5 or more hours on her personal business venture.
And then you also have to sort of live with a sense of urgency, right? No one is your boss. No one is telling you what to do. No one's telling you that things need to be done at certain times. And so it becomes sort of essential and critical that you sort of pace yourself and that you put yourself in timelines and deadlines in order to execute and to get the thing, to get the work done.
Essien says it's normal for her to work 60 to 70 hours a week between the two, not to mention putting up her own money to try to launch her business. So is all this worth it?
Yes, it is worth it. Because at the end of the day, if this does not scale accordingly, if this fails, the process is what's most important, right? The ability to meet, the opportunity to meet so many great minds and so many amazing entrepreneurs, and people who are just as committed to this cause as I am.
Last week's workshop in Washington was attended by about 20 entrepreneurs. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 8:16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Four people were reported killed and dozens were injured October 20th when police opened fire on demonstrators in the Congo's capital, Brazzaville. The protests were against a proposed 25th of October constitutional referendum that would overcome immutable terms, term limits, and allow the incumbent, President Denis Sassou Nguesso, to stand for another term. The United States strongly condemns the violence and notes with concern President Sassou Nguesso's decision to hold the referendum. As President Barack Obama stated in his address to the African Union, Nelson Mandela and George Washington forged a lasting legacy not only because of what they did in office, but because they were willing to leave office and transfer power peacefully. President Obama underscored that when a leader tried to change the rules in the middle of the game just to stay in office, it risks instability and strife, as we have seen in Burundi, and this is often just the first step down a perilous path. Regular, peaceful, democratic leadership transitions provide a dynamic and healthy mechanism for citizens to hold political leaders accountable for their governance and foster long-term stability. No democracy is well served when its leader alters its constitution for personal or political gain. U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby said the United States strongly encourages opposing sides to come together in dialogue to defuse the situation and to seek true consensus on a way to move forward without further bloodshed. As before, Mr. Kirby noted, we believe peaceful, free, and transparent transfers of power respecting existing term limits are essential to democratic development and long-term stability. We call on President Sassou Nguesso to postpone the referendum, to defuse the current situation, and allow for dialogue and discussion.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing.
So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.